Good morning, Holly Grove. Thanks for inviting me again. Lovely to be here, and lovely to be here on Epiphany, one of my favorite celebrations. I kid you not, we do this at my house every Epiphany, so tomorrow we're going to be doing that, and two little boys freezing in the cold will be holding candles as we do this blessing. One year I used chalk that was blue, and it hasn't wiped off yet, so I just have to keep kind of scribbling over the date each time. But I encourage you to take this home, do this. This is a really lovely gift to your family. I invite you to pray with me as we begin. Sometimes we search long and hard, God, and we just come up short. And sometimes things are put into our laps and we just like to return them. And sometimes, despite those surprise endings, falling short, having the unexpected and the unwelcome thrust upon us, we find we're in the presence of the divine. We're in the presence of you. May it be so with us again today. Amen. How many of you still have your Christmas tree up? Show of hands. Anybody? Yeah, good, excellent. We had to take ours down just because I was afraid it was going to light on fire. You know, we were about at that time when everything turned into kindling. So we did that yesterday. Otherwise, it'd be up through tomorrow if we did it. How many of you have gift receipts still? Anybody willing to admit to that? Anybody? No? See, on the heels of Christmas Day, there are a couple things that are sticking around, right? Usually it's a really brittle Christmas tree, right? And then it's a stack of things that we have to take back, along with gifts receipts. It doesn't fit, or it's not the right model, or it's not on our wish list, or because I'm a Packers fan, it's Bears gear, and you have to take it back. And by the way, they play today. It's just true. And we probably haven't returned the gifts quite yet, or maybe you have, but on every short stack is another short stack. That's the gift receipts. You can't return them back without the gift receipts, the dreaded and loathed gift receipt, the proof of purchase, that necessary item needed to return anything and receive compensation. And there is undoubtedly another stack at most houses, too. It's a stack of presents with no gift receipts that you can't take back. And so it makes its way to the basement or the attic or the back of the closet or the local thrift store. I have a friend whose parents often come to visit around the holidays. And he's got four daughters. And his mother loves to shop at the local thrift store. And he knows this. And they have very generous relatives. And he and his wife and daughters are major contributors to a local thrift store because they have generous relatives. And sometimes, with Christmas gifts with no receipts, that's where they end up. And so this last year, she left for her post-Christmas thrifting, which she always does, and he had to sit her down and say, look, you're going to see some things that you bought there, all right? And I'm going to ask you not to purchase them again, because most of the kids' clothes there are from us. Don't buy anything for the girls. There are always items that we wish we had gift receipts for, that we wish we could take back. Out of the items bought by these sages in today's reading from Matthew, I know which one Jesus probably wanted to give back. This festival day, the celebration, Epiphany, by the way, is a fancy word for manifestation or to make known. Today we receive some insight into the person of Jesus. Some things are made known. Matthew is the only one that makes mention of a toddler Jesus, by the way. And this is Jesus as a toddler. They're in a house now, probably a couple years after his birth. And Jesus receives these very strange gifts. What are the gifts? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh, right? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Strange gifts from strange non-Jewish travelers. What is Matthew trying to say to us, to anybody reading this, about Jesus, about the gifts in this story? Surely it's something that many people wish they could take back. See, this thing, these magi, these sages were undoubtedly, they were pagans. They were non-believers. They might have been even astrologers looking up at the stars. They were non-Jews and obviously non-Christians because there was no such thing as a Christian back then. These people who follow other religious paths, they were kneeling down to Jesus offering gifts. It's weird. Matthew's gift in telling this story, and it's in no other gospel. Luke doesn't mention it. Mark doesn't mention it. John does his own thing and doesn't even glimpse at it. Is that our preconceived notion of who is in and who is out, who is a Christ follower and who is not, is probably wrong. It's blown up in this story. It is unwelcome news for many of us who like to think that we know who is right and who is wrong, who is in and who is out. It reminds me of Rob Bell's story in Love Wins. Has anybody read Love Wins? Love Wins is a great little book by Rob Bell. He was hanging pictures in the lobby of his huge church, big box church, mega church, and he had hung a picture of Gandhi in there. These were change makers in the world, and he had hung a picture of Mahatma Gandhi in there, and someone incredulously wrote under it, "Too bad he's in hell." To which Rob Bell asked, "Is he?" Which led Rob Bell to write this book, which led him to get kicked out of his church. See, sometimes having our preconceived notions blown up is an unwelcome gift. We have to rethink everything. The Magi are unwelcome news for me because they make me reevaluate who I imagine to be kneeling in word and deed at the foot of the Savior while I am often out chasing other stars. In the Epiphany season, we catch a glimpse of what Jesus is making manifest in the world. Jesus is breaking down barriers, slowly, surely, over decades and centuries. Barriers between being in and being out. But there are other glimpses being made manifest here. Gold, we know what that's used for, right? What's gold used for? Purchasing, right? Buying things, selling things. If you're my sons, hoarding someplace, right? They received a silver dollar from their grandfather this year, and they immediately had to look up its value. I said, "It's worth a dollar, big guy." But it was silver, right? Right? Gold. Frankincense, what's that used for? Anybody? Yeah, it's perfume. Makes you smell good. You can light it. It's incense, right? What's myrrh used for? Anybody know? Myrrh is used for washing dead bodies. Myrrh is used for washing dead bodies. These are really strange gifts to give to a baby, right? Strange gifts to give to a baby. See, this is the thing. These glimpses of the gifts given here, like this pesky third gift, myrrh, that's the one that I think Jesus wishes there was a gift receipt for, that he wanted to take back. He's hoping that this third stage kept the gift receipt and included it in the box, I'm sure of it. Because as you all just heard, myrrh is essentially the perfume you put on a body of the deceased person to keep it from smelling up the place. It's the only thing you would use it for. Myrrh is only useful at funerals. It was like they had brought Jesus $100 bills, Chanel number 5, and a casket. That's what they brought him. You hope that third one comes with a gift receipt. But this is the thing being manifested about Jesus here. This is the deep truth. Jesus was a king deserving of gold. Jesus was the fragrant wisdom, like frankincense, of a God who chooses the unlikely as the vessel for transformation. And Jesus was going to die because of the way he behaved and talked. The powers of the world weren't going to let it slide. In a world not keen of having unwelcome things being made manifest to it, in a world that likes its rulers and wants a rule-following, rule-giving God, the rule-breaking, rule-defying Jesus doesn't stand a chance. He's going to die for it. And that leads us to the third thing being manifest today in this reading, a gift of revelation for you and me, and it's one that I bet we wish we had a gift receipt for, because here's the thing, and I hate to be the one to break it to you, but on the heels of Christmas, on the heels of the new year, where undoubtedly our self-improvement resolutions are already in jeopardy, We get to hear today that in following Christ, we're likely to end up with myrrh mixed in with our life. Here we are trying to make 2025 prosperous, and right at the outset, we're faced with this gift of the Magi story, this third gift of myrrh, this gift of a casket. Because if Jesus is all about breaking down the barriers of who is in and who is out, there's also one thing that isn't negotiable and isn't up for discussion, and that isn't broken down but is added to this pile of gifts. To follow Christ means you're going to have to die for the sake of the world. You're going to have to. You get a little myrrh. Merry Christmas. Yes, in 2025, we are called to die for the sake of the world. And for each of us, that'll be something different, I imagine. For each of us, though, I imagine it may look like dying to our preconceived notions. And maybe even dying to our New Year's resolutions. For us collectively as a church, for you, Holly Grove, well, you're going to have to ponder how Christ is calling you to sacrifice for your neighbors, for each other, for this world that God so deeply loves this year. Alongside your gifts that you'd like to return, you better pile myrrh on top because it's not really welcome news. Alongside your New Year's resolution, you better add to die for the sake of the world somewhere in there. Because that's where Jesus is leading if you're following. And hearing that, it's amazing there are any Christians left in the world. Check your pockets for the gift receipt. But in doing so, in giving of ourselves for the sake of the world, for the sake of our neighbor, for the sake of each other in here, we also find ourselves sitting alongside the divine in the pits of the hells of the world that need some sacrifice to get people out of there. And sitting with the divine in the face of the world's Herods, and sitting with the divine even in the pits of hell, even if you find yourself sitting with some other surprising characters like pagan magi, totally blowing up your preconceived notions, you find yourself in the midst of salvation. I mean, that's the very definition of salvation. Salvation is being safe with God. And you are. So you can die for the sake of the world because you're safe with God. And guess what? It's one size fits all. It's the New Year's resolution that we need to internalize, and it's a gift worth keeping, which is good, because it can't be returned.